Von der Blackbox zur Glasbox. In der heutigen Folge spreche ich mit drei hervorragenden Experten über die Frage, welche Verantwortung und Entscheidung wir wirklich an eine KI übergeben können und wo klare Grenzen notwendig sind. Die Aufnahme fand im Podcast-Studio von MSP Global in Barcelona statt. Vielen, vielen Dank an das Veranstalterteam für diese tolle Möglichkeit. Und mit dabei waren die wunderbare Therese Johnson, Mr. Tech-Kompetenz Ben Lee von Enable und der KI-Freibekannt Timo Groneberg von Polarize. Im Mittelpunkt stehen Verantwortung, Haftung und Transparenz beim Einsatz von KI in MSP-Services und im Dialog wird deutlich, KI kann Prozesse massiv beschleunigen, skalieren, es ersetzt aber vermutlich keine menschliche Bewertung, gar im Sinne einer Moral. Die Kernfrage scheint aus meiner persönlichen Sicht zu sein, ob wir nichtsdestotrotz zukünftig, auch wenn sich das alle wünschen, überhaupt in der Lage sein werden, KI-Entscheidungen als Menschen zu überprüfen oder ob wir am Ende einfach der KI vertrauen werden, weil es zu komplex ist und diese Überprüfung durch uns zwar im Prozess integrierbar ist, aber inhaltlich kaum umsetzbar. Herzlich willkommen bei MSP Insights, dem Podcast für Systemhauschefs und Führungskräfte, die im Bereich Dienstleistungen und Managed Services profitabel wachsen wollen. Mein Name ist Olaf Kaiser und ich bin Partner und Berater in der Unternehmensberatung Ubega. Wenn ihr diesen Podcast mögt, dann abonniert ihn bitte und gebt ihm eine gute Bewertung. Damit helft ihr uns sehr bei der weiteren Umsetzung. Jetzt viel Spaß mit dem Gespräch.
Good morning, everyone. I'm really excited to have such great experts this morning. Here we have Therese, Ben and Timo, and we will speak about AI. And not a lot of guys are speaking about AI, even at MSP Global. We're here in the wonderful Barcelona. You enjoyed the evening last night?
I
heard it from Ben. I don't speak about details, Ben, but I heard from you who were at the Western.
That's good. Well, let's just say I left my cowboy hat downstairs.
I saw it. I saw him flying around doing something. I don't know what he was doing.
This is a good place to start.
This has been the best time. I don't know about you guys, but boy, if I've never been to a conference where we could do all of this stuff at two days filled with.
There's a lot going on.
Oh, gosh. Amazing.
And there is a world without AI, but we are skipping this only for this podcast. And we're speaking about AI and we're speaking about liability and trust in terms of AI. Mm-hmm. So first of all, please, all of you, introduce yourself. Give us a little background information. Where are you from? What do you do for a living? And who do you help? Therese.
Austin, Texas, my friend. Hailing.
Congratulations.
I know. It's just beautiful here in Barcelona. I'm having the best time. But my name is Therese Johnson, and I work at First Genesis. We are an industrial AI edge company. So when you think about everything, all things real-time data, real-time infrastructure, we wrap infrastructure on distributed computing technology. So it's just a cool place. I spent a decade at Microsoft, did a stint a couple of years at Salesforce. So when you talk in Accenture as well. And so when you talk about big enterprise software, all that good stuff and distributed computing and AI, my world lies at the convergence of embedded AI on everything, drones, satellite data, all of that. We're going to talk about that and I'm super excited. So yeah.
Every time I see you, something in me wants to yell the fabric. You know why. I attended your session.
It is.
I was on attending your session.
You know why?
Yelling all the time.
Fabric. Yes. We're going to talk a little bit about that today, but man,
First question to you is, how much do you personally trust AI? It's about trust in this session.
This whole session is trust. Part. And this is the conversation that I think all of us have been waiting on, who've been deeply embedded in this space. Because I don't know if we're all asking the right questions, but my trust for it to analyze, my trust for it to come back with correlations that we can't do, spot on 100%, when it's not hallucinative and we can kind of control that through RAG. But my judgment, morality, making decisions that involve the holistic cognition? Heck no.
We will come to this later on, I promise. Ben, what's your background?
Hi, I'm Ben Lee. I'm based out of the UK. I work for a company called Enable. My background, I've worked for many years as an enterprise-orientated consultant. I'm a Microsoft MVP in Teams and Copilot. Done a bunch of
Copilot adoption.
No, all right, okay. Gloves off. What I do at Enable is I'm a head nerd, and we have a team of head nerds, which is quite an interesting job title and a role. But basically, we try and help people out and make people happy, both internally and customers externally. And Enable, what we do is we have a suite of products that help with cyber resiliency, so endpoint management, cybersecurity, and backup and recovery tooling and technologies.
And how much do you personally trust AI in your work life or in your private life, or you want to speak?
I use it a lot of different places under the guise of experimenting to, test and see and push. In terms of trust, it depends what you're asking it and what task you're getting it to do. If you need it to do something very analytical and precise, I put the onus back on myself to trust, to look at the sources and verify and validate. If I'm asking it to help me rewrite content and stuff, I trust it a lot more. It's a sliding scale of risk depending on the type of task that you're asking it to do.
Thank you. Timo, welcome. What do you do for a living?
Yeah, my name is Timo Groneberg. I'm living in Hanover in Germany. I've been banks. So.
50 kilometers from my home.
I love this. Yeah. This is getting more interesting.
Yeah.
We are neighbors.
next. From an American and UK standpoint. Absolutely. Our kids are playing together. Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, I've been in the MSP and cloud industry since more than 20 years, founded and worked in different companies, and switched to Polarize mid of this year, and focused highly on the AI business. At Polarize, we are developing AI factories. What is an AI factory? That's one of the questions.
Right, you still try to discover, right?
Yeah, I will do. That's GPU-optimized data center, and we are providing AI cloud services, sovereign European-hosted AI cloud services for MSPs, software companies, enterprises, and so on.
And how much do you personally trust AI?
Yeah, and honestly, I completely trust in AI. I use it for several use cases in my personal, but also in my business life. But I think we all have to keep an eye on how we use it and for which use cases we use it, which data we hand over to the AI, and don't close our eyes and let the AI do anything.
So, one information for me, I personally do not trust myself. I'm not that self-confident, so I'm not sure that I make
sense. So how can you outsource that trust?
So I love it. The first field is AI is the silent operator. Ben, I want to try to start with you. So what do you say from your head nerd view? Where does AI already manages our IT operations, our IT management? So inside of Enable in a concrete description.
It's an interesting question because of the definition of what you mean when you say, how much are we using or trusting AI? Because there's quite the hype sort of cycle bubble going on around AI, where there's a lot of vendors say that they offer AI solutions when it's not really, it's advanced algorithms, which sort of have been branded up as AI. So to me, kind of the differentiator would be with an algorithm, you ask it to do something once, you ask it to do it again a second time and a third time with the same inputs, get the same outputs, whereas an AI, it's squishy. You get different outputs the multiple times you run it. So at Enable, we're looking at where we can sensibly use AI inside our tooling and our technologies, and the places that we're starting to do that is around things like helping people with building automations or with creating scripting and that sort of stuff, and looking at how we can start making technicians' lives easier with the data that is available through our tooling and our technology. But it is, it's taking that at a slow and sensible pace to make sure that the outputs you get are going to be reliable and, correct and trustworthy, I guess.
Well, it's true. And so think about this. You have 100 engineers that takes maybe 6 months to predict a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say a pipeline. They're getting data coming off of scans, underwater remote vehicles. They're getting a lot of video. They're processing petabyte scale video underwater. You're having to get data there, satellite imagery on geolocate. And you have the typical people, human beings that are walking around with apps. In no way, shape, or form will we ever expect a human to be able to process hundreds of petabyte scale data in milliseconds.
Yeah.
We're not capable. But what does it do for a company who's lost billions because they could not predict corrosion? There's no way they can look at video after video and predict a problem. And so AI, if we understand it and know how to use it correctly behind the scenes silently, it could surface up something that takes 6 months for 100 people to do. It could do it by itself in seconds, but then there's more. So I think that's what we're probably going to be talking about. Is there's silent operational things that it's going to do way better than we ever could. We don't have a human capacity. So I'll stop there, but then we can have a conversation from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly a perfect example in the way we can use and get the benefits out of the adoption of AI.
Let's take this example from trees. So the topic of this discussion is, what does AI provide in terms of the process, and when do we hand over the decision making to AI? And that's totally another question. So in terms of this image scanning, and do AI gives proposals, or does they do decision, they downsize everything, they cut one from the internet or server? So what's your view on the difference between running systems and making decisions within the processes?
Yeah, I think it depends heavily about what kind of decisions we are talking about.
Sending a drone to someone's home.
Doing what the
Mary got the wrong address.
Yeah.
Looking what the neighbors are doing.
Really, really deeply. Look under the Christmas tree. We sent you something, yes?
A coupon from Amazon.
Yeah.
Amazon.
A Groupon.
Oh, God. Oh, you're bad. You're bad.
Oh, no.
No.
Cut this off.
Please. I'm great. Now, come back to
decisions versus steering the processes.
Exactly. I think the most use case we are seeing currently in the market is exactly this kind of co-working, supporting processes, making things easier, and doing manual work much times faster. And as part of this, there are a lot of points where also I make recommendations and slightly decisions. But from my point of view, it's important that we don't let AI run completely autonomously. I think we are not at this point. We can do this currently. We will come closer to this, but it's important to have the human in the loop, which supervise what the AI is doing and get the approvals.
My view of the future is the human uses AI to check AI. So so how does human...
Well, you don't trust yourself. I don't know. We're in trouble.
Yeah.
We got two then.
Well, it was to add to that, the risk as well that I think is not, you know, doesn't get as much visibility is that, you know, by human nature, we give people a tool and say, this is able to do all of these things for you. It's going to solve a lot of your problems, maybe not make decisions for you, but help you get there. There's a risk that people don't sensibly check that. They take the output and they act on it verbatim. They don't, you know, there's a laziness that can creep in there. And that's super important to make sure that there's, you know, what's the understanding of where it can be fallible, where it can be infallible, like, you know, and to your point, using an AI to check an AI to check an AI, you like the owner still has to sit with the operator, with the person, but it's very easy to be lazy about that or skip over that if you're in a hurry, in a rush, you know, whatever reasons.
Let's switch a little bit to accountability or liability. So given even that a human makes decision, so who is in to what degree liable if things went wrong for them? So the drone goes to the wrong home or whatever. Therese, please.
This is extremely important. Number one, to go back to what you were saying earlier, Timo, you absolutely, strategic decision is a human, it's a complex cognition. So if there's a partnership that I think everybody is missing, people want to immediately go and say, we're going to replace people, and they have no understanding of exactly that. The accountability component, that human in the loop that you mentioned, is the most critical piece to scaling this technology autonomously, because it will always be semi-autonomous, in my humble opinion. But imagine the ability for us to be able to say, okay, from the time that you get requirements, there's an accountability factor that you, as the owner of the requirement, you no longer are going to operate in a spreadsheet. You're going to operate in an accountability governance tool, because we need to have full end-to-end lineage. Governance lineage is a real thing. We're going through it now. And our platform to say, listen, it's not about a black box, it's glass box. How do we move from a black box technology to glass box technology? How is it that we're able to say, okay, so if an MSP brings in an AI and you did not check your vendor, you are held accountable for that stage in the cycle. So what happens is when Waymo gets into an accident right now, there are so many lawsuits but Waymo is accountable because you're putting this dangerous equipment on the road. So accountability is multifaceted, and we've got to start to take a look at this. It is the accountability of the requirements owner, because if you get a requirement wrong, you're coming in, we're coming in as vendors, you're coming in, Timo, as a vendor, putting in your stack. Your stack is only going to do what the requirement says. So if the owner got it wrong and something happens and a decision was made autonomously, you're held accountable if your requirements were wrong. We MSPs are held accountable if we implemented it not according to requirements. So now what does this mean? It means that we're looking and asking the wrong questions. Owners and CEOs have to be asking the right questions to say, we have to now build new governance and lineage models that are AI enabled, human in the loop enabled, co-pilot enabled. And we're building now an entire ecosystem around the way that we govern and comply, have compliance end to end through lineage capability. And that's humbling. My focus is where we need to go.
I want to use the visual with a glass box instead of a black box. And if there is a human layer or human safety net, the human really does have to understand the problem. So that's a risk I see, that there is a human layer in the process. But are there really humans who in such a deeply manner understand the problem that if there's a proposal coming from AI, these humans are seeing this and, oh, no, we are not following the AI route. I have a better idea. Is this really, let's go 5 years ahead or down the road, is this really possible that we have humans that know this concrete situation where this special situation, that they know this better than the AI proposed?
It is why I'm so freaking frustrated with CEOs, CFOs, COOs who are just making dumb decisions right now.
Yeah.
We're just going to let people go because we're checking a box of OPEX.
That's
we're not making our margins
runs,
on EBITDA.
Therese.
We're not. I'm done with this. Yeah. No, seriously, I'm done. And why I'm so frustrated is because they're not coming to experts to sit down and say, because let me be very clear. I see ChatGPT, Claude, all of it. They will give you whatever you want because the models hallucinate. If you don't have RAG of other things in there, and RAG models domain specific, at the end of the day, we are not ready to start cutting people, because you have to now reorient and say, if it spits out an answer and a recommendation, that recommendation could be cold-blooded wrong. Because downstream, there will always be black box to a certain degree. My frustration is the hatchet that's happening to real lives, real people who have families. And because of a number that you're trying to check, you're not doing your job to make sure that we have the right people, like you stated, to check AI. I'm just going to turn it over because that's a sore subject with me right now.
Yeah, thanks. I think I totally agree with you, Therese. And I think that we need to educate the people and whole organizations to really implement AI in their process, in their daily work. And this is a process over the next 5 years for sure, to bring them in the situation that they can decide about questions like this. It's a kind of maturity. I know projects where the C-suite is discussing about which LLM should we use after we buy this super fancy NVIDIA stuff. That's not the right way of discussion. And in terms of the liability and who is responsible for what the AI is doing, I think we need the right guardrails. We need the right input. You're talking about REC systems. It's a question which information we are putting inside the AI, which resources are given to prepare decisions or given options where the human in the loop can choose off which is the best way. And maybe the human in the loop has another perspective and more information to make his decision of A, B, or C.
It's a challenge because we've not come up against this sort of a thing before. If you look at who's responsible for a car breaking down, right? At the moment, if someone drives it into something, it's the person who drove the car. If the axle snaps on the car, it's the manufacturer of the car. That's an understood sort of approach with an AI solution and system. It's back to that. It's a squidgy black box in the middle that we don't know what's happening. You don't know how it works. So you don't know how much is the fault of the decision making, in quotes, that it made with the inputs that you gave it, or if it's the inputs you gave it, or if it's the guardrails that went wrong. This is where I think we're all in agreement that it needs very strong guardrails. The problem is that there's such the hype cycle of everything trying to move so fast, companies trying to invest money in it, save money by using it, allegedly. It's When do you stop and make sure that you have the appropriate security measures in place?
And let's take one layer deeper in terms of liability. And let's take the perspective of a managed service provider. So maybe we resell or manage a security solution from whoever vendor here at MSP Global has a booth, right? And this vendor has AI insight. So I created a managed security service for my end customer, and the vendor, it's not my decision, it's the decision of the vendor to put AI into a lot of processes and what is allowed and what is not allowed and so on. And this AI in the vendor solution makes decisions, right? So it cuts off a network segment and whatever. So for me, as a managed service provider, how can I orchestrate liability over all the different roles? So
the fabric!
Yes.
This is why the fabric is so critical. And I get my plug. I was waiting on you to bring your cheese.
Taking such a long time, Trish, right?
Too long. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So I will say this. Remember, one of the parts is there's an ecosystem scorecard. There is a partner enablement automation. What happens is we come from these spreadsheets to say that if we have 40 vendors in our ecosystem, that we know exactly what they do. It is our job. I'm not an MSP, but we've been asked, I think I shared this, that for First Genesis, like when we plot our platform in, can we manage it? Because it's deeply embedded in so many different stacks and business processes. That typically would be an MSP, but now the owners and operators are having to come to software development companies to manage what they put in because the specialized expertise isn't there. In AI yet for MSPs, that's a gap. But I think it's going to get solved in this $1 trillion economy that's about to get unlocked for MSPs, which is amazing. The big bet here is that I talked so much, I forgot what the question was. You see, this is the problem.
With the fabric?
Okay, the fabric. This is the opportunity, right? I'm so excited, as you can see, and I'm waking up too. The opportunity here is in your ecosystem, MSPs are absolutely responsible. Because when you bring someone in, it's your job to say, before I let you come in my stack, I want an SBOM. SBOM is a bill of material. I want to know every piece of code. I want to know every line of code. If it's proprietary, we'll sign the NDA. And then I'm going to have my hacker. I have a hack team that will come in and they are going to test your AI. My point is we need now new methods new capabilities and new opportunities. Because if we don't do that, then you, as an MSP, you're bringing all these vendors into your stack. So now you have to protect your stack. And you could, guys can disagree if it's not agreeable. I see you're anxious.
You're right. I hand it over to Ben with one point. The IT channel or managed service provider branch is made up of SMB customers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 95% have less than 20 employees. There's no one now, next year, in 5 years, who has the skills, the competencies to check this necessary check. So Ben.
The MSP to their customer, the responsibility is on the MSP because they have selected what their technology stack that they offer.
I thought you would answer this. That's not the vendor, right? It's the MSP.
No, well, hang on. I haven't finished my thought.
Oh!
So the MSP selects their solutions to provide to their customers, but then the MSP to their vendor, it's up to them for how they manage that relationship and where the onus is, you know. So that's back on the vendor having responsible implementations of AI where stuff can be turned on, can be turned off, can be controlled,
yeah,
can be understood. So it's a chain. But there's no clear delineator between where the responsibility, you know, in a legal sense would stop. That's back to that. What are the inputs? What are the outputs?
So, Timo, should we make the customer more liable, more accountable for all of this? It's not one of us four.
He's stretching. He's stretching, Timo. He needs you to agree with him somewhere. Give him what he needs.
Sorry.
Me. We're neighbors. Think about this. We are neighbors, Timo. And no answer.
We were keepers, I think. Oh, great. I really like this discussion because it's matched my perspective about the relationship between MSP and vendor. But what I miss is exactly the perspective from the customer. For sure, as discussed, this is a question of maturity. As an MSP, this is with AI-driven tools, but with all tools we have chosen in the past before there was AI, we have the obligation to take a look on which tools, which vendors we are choosing. Maybe not every line of code. I guess most MSPs not able to do this.
99%.
Yeah, more or less.
Of the code or the MSPs?
We have the obligation against our clients. To take care about the choice, which vendor we are bringing into our technology stack, into our MSP services and so on. That's our obligation and we have to take care about it. That's in kind of expectation of the customer. But on the other hand, it's, an enabling and we adopting this advantage to add AI into our MSP services and the customers expecting this. That we are going with the technological development and you make use of AI for bringing our services. So I think it's a glass box to make it transparent to the customers and make them part of the discussion in which depths we want to adopt AI into the services and into the operations we are running to the customer.
And it may be that AI is looking at the code, right? And it may be that we have a different kind of data agreement. It's a code agreement because let me be very clear. We're not going to get away from agentic. We're not going to get away from autonomous, right? We're going to move really, really rapidly towards agentic AI. To me, you better have it's a whole nother different data agreement. I have to see under the hood of what you're bringing in. When you tell me to go shut a valve off that's going to impact my operations and cost me millions of dollars for 5 minutes because you predict something's going to happen and then it's wrong, somebody owe me millions of dollars. And who is it going to come from? So, but then you may not owe anything because it might have been the owner that was at fault. So the key in the beginning is we all now together as governance, as committees, have to be in a room making the decision to say, how low do we go with the code? Now, we could be have tools that get dropped in, that get deployed, and they just literally crawl, look at the code and come back and tell you, this is what it says. It translates it. We're there now. And what does that do for proprietary IP? We have a lot of things that we're all going to have to sit down and this is a very tough discussion.
And if we're talking about using AI for making decisions, there's two sides of it as well. Your point there about shutting a valve and what's the risk of doing it, but there's the risk of not doing it as well. There's the two sides of the decision have to be taken into account. The risk of patching a server versus not patching a server and balancing, you know, that's where it comes down to maybe a purely mathematical answer of the risk was 45% versus 55. Like, that's how you make a call, but it's all ultimately transparency. It's the transparency of the inputs and the transparency of the outputs that you get that then inform whatever the decision is.
And then, Ben, you just said something really great. If it is the 45 versus the 50%, whatever that percentage is, the other problem that we have, my friend, you're amazing, by the way. This has really been a fantastic discussion. My challenge to all of this is that then there's the element of intuition, wisdom. The things that we have in our cognition, our humanity cognition, let's call it that, that you would say, I'm going to forego the 45% risk and I'm going to delay it until maybe a business critical time for you, these users is between 8 a.m. and 2 a.m. or whatever. There is the application of experiences and all the other things that come with that decision to say, I'm going to patch during this time. The empathetic quality that if I shut a system down for 20 minutes in a mission critical time of a company, how does the AI apply all of the other things that go along with the decision if it's autonomous?
So that's your scope of inputs, right? Because all of that is, you know, lived experience in quotes. So that's, you know, that's stuff that you could train or you could teach to some degree, but it's making sure you have the full range of inputs available to make a decision.
Okay.
And in the input is, you know, the business is busy between these hours, therefore we're not going to do that. But if you don't have that as an input, if you just have the input of this is a critical vulnerability, it needs to be patched as soon as possible, then you're missing a chunk of the input, so you don't get a true decision.
I would like to stick to transparency towards the client with one more question. If we rise to the level of transparency, so we tell our clients everything about where AI is used and who is liable, would this help the client or would this scare him? Team, what's your view on this?
I think it will not scare the customers. That's not the term for you. I think it makes sense to involve the customers in the discussion.
But good luck with your political career. Yes, you're looking brilliant and you have a wonderful perspective.
Thank you so much.
Olaf,
what was the question? Sorry.
Love it. A higher level of transparency, would it be helpful for the customer to decide with which MSP he should?
Okay, no, I think it's not helpful. As more details that we share with the customers, it doesn't bring the decisions and the discussion with the customers forward. And to add on this point, I think the most customers are not interested to get this depth of information and in which depth we are adopting AI or any other technology to run their services for the customers. And other examples in our daily life, I'm not aware about the depth, how my doctor, for example, use AI for analyzing an MRT scan, and they do it every day because they have the technology in place. But my doctor doesn't talk about exactly
Timo,
this.
Timo.
Oh, really?
Oh, you just opened us up. I feel your energy too. We're ready for you. Go ahead. I'm going to let Ben take you.
But I think in that example, whether you choose to go and read that information about where it's being used is different to knowing that that information is available should you want to go and find it. So having policy and, you know, processes, like if you've got a contract, you know, a company I used to work for always said if you had to fall back on the contract, you're doing it wrong. But the contract was still there explaining these were the terms, these were the conditions. But, you know, I think you need to have the information available. Whether you refer to it or not is up to you.
To make it available as general terms in every contract. And
I will tell you, I'm going to just say it like it is. This will be a competitive differentiation. I'm just going to say it. If I know that I have the difference between, and there, by the way, there are millions of AI tools that are out here every day. New ones are coming, millions more are coming every day. But if I know that you're going to give me something that has Glassbox and you're using it in your marketing value proposition, the value prop is my AI over yours. You're going to know that when we make a decision, you're going to have a complete lineage and you're going to have visualization. We've noticed that it's changed the game even in our own conversation on our product, because we're having to look at the Palantirs of the world. You're having to look at what IBM is doing with Watson, and you're facing that. You're going to face it, you know, where it is a competitive differentiation. If you can sit down and say that my tool end to end, Mr. Customer, Olaf, if you doesn't this sound great? If you use this tool, you never have to worry, because it's filled with all of the love and the transparency, everything that you're looking for compared to Timo's tool. How does that sound? You know, like,
he doesn't really know what his stuff is doing, his stack.
But,
right?
But my stuff, you know, from end to end. I mean, what does that sound like compared to Timo's stuff? So that's what I want you to consider.
That's why he's doing this political thing. Okay. Guys, thank you very much.
Oh, Timo.
Yeah, please.
It's up to you.
It's up to
Final comment to this discussion.
So I'd love to
calm down, Timo. Yes. And no answer.
I love Timo.
Oh, thank you, Trees. I think it depends highly on the customer. For sure, we had to have the information available for these customers like Trees, who want to check every line of the code and look at.
Yeah.
Take a really big.
With this bunch of hackers. Yes.
Absolutely.
In the back. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's fine. They got
what else? What else you are doing, Trees?
They had a nerd.
But on the other hand, I think it's important to have it transparent for the customer they want to take a look on. But in the end, the customer engages an MSP and go to MSP to get rid of all these details. They want to buy managed servers to don't make their own thoughts about all these details. They want to have a company, a partner on their side that they can care about the decision, which vendor is the right to manage the IT of a small and medium business.
Timo's right, though. Timo's right today. I don't know if that's going to hold tomorrow when people start using it for agentic purposes to make decisions, strategic decisions. It's going to be hard. You're right for today, though. They just want the managed services to manage everything.
Maybe there arises a new role of not managed service providers, so AI service providers. Oh, what?
Seriously, I agree.
And these are the ones, maybe they're companions of the infrastructure.
Oh,
should I stop
now
here?
You're talking about TAR. Keep going. You know, this sounds so good. Ooh.
Maybe there are companions of the... So AI companion is a term we have already. So maybe there's this role, and in combination with managed infrastructure service provider, they together do all the needed stuff in the future. And I have one last question for every one of you. So if we go down the road 5 years, no one knows what that will be. But if you do... a suggestion, what will be the biggest cyber crisis we will face in 5 years? And what role does or will AI play in this scenario? We have a hat nerd, Ben. You're the only one. You should start.
To save us.
Yes. Okay.
So 5 years is a really difficult time frame, right? Because if you went back 5 years, would we have predicted that we would be sat here talking about Gen AI in the way that we are? The next sort of wave of stuff that is going to turn everything upside down to me is quantum. You know, there's a lot of effort, a lot of, research, R&D in developing quantum computing solutions. And that's going to turn security upside down from an encryption point of view. What on earth is the impact on Gen AI solutions going to be when you have that amount of compute and processing and power? Who knows?
Who knows the boat?
High five.
The stock exchange and NVIDIA. But if we have this kind of thing. Trees, what's your view?
I'm going to probably take it to more physical infrastructure. Electricity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a clue. I honestly still, right now, all these data centers are being built OpenAI announced their $500 billion. I mean, these numbers are astronomical. Compute and then ROI. I think that the market, S&P, all of it is going to have a rude awakening when it comes to investment versus return. It's going to be interesting. So those two things in the next 5 years, I feel like are going to be heavy disruptors, that all of these investments that are going into these data centers, like you said, quantum, somebody's going to come up with some low energy solutions, that the direction we've been going has all been one big facade with all the funding that's going and all this stuff. So yeah, 5 years, I just think that we're going to have some rude awakenings there.
Thank you, Tree. So in five years, will AI be still affordable? What does Polarize say?
Yeah, so what does Polarize say? Yeah. I don't want to give a prediction about which crisis will be possible, but I totally agree with you that there will be a lot of technological development and it will pace up. And from my perspective, it's super important that, especially from a European point of view, that we will become more mature, adapt these technologies, be more aware of it, to face the crisis which will come the 5 years or whenever, to be resilient and have a good situation where we can cover it.
So we will face it with love and all these hackers in our back.
I'm thank sure you very about much.
It. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you all. Thank you very much. Thank you all. This is amazing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you all. It was great to meet you.